Good evening.
Good evening.
Welcome. So, practice period. Just another name for Buddhas and ancestors. I was quoting from Dogen up there in his fascicle called Practice Period. Ongo, practice period. Peaceful abiding. Residing peacefully. He starts off quoting his teacher, Rujing. Rujing said, "Piling our bones onto the flat earth, we gouge a cave out of emptiness. Break through dualism. Splash in a black bucket." And then the paragraph that I read earlier that ends, "Winter practice period is just another name for Buddhas and ancestors." That splashing in a black bucket refers to practice period lasts a long time, and we have to bathe every once in a while, and we have to, as it said earlier, eat our meals, sleep, we stretch our legs, and certainly we do some meditative practices. And Dogen says this is the name of the Buddhas and ancestors. This attending wholeheartedly to our lives is the name of the Buddhas and ancestors. And that's what we take a look at during this 8 weeks that we do twice a year here in practice period. In the Indian days, they did it during the summer rainy period in the summer, 3 months. I think that carried on into Japan. I don't know what the weather is like in Japan at in the middle of the summer, whether it's raining or whether it's really hot. But Dogen talks about doing the 3 month practice period in the summer, and here in the West, we've traditionally done it in the fall and the winter, maybe during our rainy period. Taking care of our lives, looking at our practice, turning our lives into practice with this wholehearted awareness of our daily lives. When we look at our lives wholeheartedly, we aren't such a person that's separate from the rest of the world, that goes about trying to get things done during the day. When we look at something wholeheartedly, when we do an activity wholeheartedly, we really want to embrace this moment. We want to merge and become intimate with this moment. We want to embrace and care for this moment and this body and mind. So it's a little different way of doing things when we give our wholehearted attention to just this, to just splashing about in the tub, to just eating our meals, to just curling our legs up into this posture of the Buddha and just sitting. It's a little different kind of attention and a different kind of intention. We want to really get close to the activity that we're doing here and now. You know, when we're in sesshin, when we're in our retreat, that starts tomorrow, we have quite a ceremony around each meal, lots of chanting. We handle the bowls in a particular way. We get served the food in a certain order. And, you know, when we leave sesshin, everybody says, gee, that food was delicious. We always have leftovers, and we all gather around and pull out our favorite leftovers. And, you know, I think part of the food is we generally tell the cooks to prepare the food simply. Certainly our cooks cook wonderful food as well, but I think it's the wholehearted attention that we give every meal that makes the food so memorable for us. We have cared for it, we've embraced it in a way that we might not attend to every meal that we eat when we're not in retreat. Of course, in practice period, we take on practices. We take on a little more sitting, either here or at home, or we attend these retreats or day sits, or we take on practices at home, devotional practices. And one of them that some people that have just started the practice period tonight, some people are going to take on just doing the meal chant during these 8 weeks to see if they can bring that attention, that wholehearted attention to their meals. And when we're splashing about in the tub, we're the bathing Buddha. This wholehearted attention is the body and mind of the Buddha. And we can see how we can attend wholeheartedly to all of the miracles that we do during the day as the body and mind of Buddha. That poem also says that we carve or gouge a cave out of emptiness. With our sitting practice, we develop the faith and the confidence that the phenomena in the world, the things in the world, are not what we think they are. They're empty of what we think their conventional function should be. We can look at the glasses and we all agree to call these glasses, but you know, the glass was made out of sand from the earth. The plastic made from the petrochemicals deep in the earth. And they just came together in this particular form because of the causes and conditions rendered to them that they were subjected to. And we've all agreed to call these glasses. So when we have to agree that everything in our life is empty of our conceptual imputations on them. And in practice period, we take this whole universe of emptiness and we carve out a space that says we're going to take a close look at this emptiness, at the way we conceptualize things, and maybe not hold so tightly onto those conceptualizations for these 8 weeks. So this empty practice that we bring to these 8 weeks in the middle of the empty, interdependent universe that we already are, is this cave carved out of emptiness that we call practice period, which is another name for the Buddhas and the ancestors. We develop this confidence that the world is interdependent and empty of our concepts of it. We develop that confidence frequently through our sitting practice, where we sit quietly, where we watch thoughts that might come up, and instead of holding on to those concepts the way we might do otherwise, we let them go, we treat them a little more lightly. And we find that sometimes, we find in these 40 minutes or these 5-day meditation periods or during the 10-minute walking meditation, sometimes we get a glimpse of that luminous clarity that we all are, and that we are manifesting every day. And I think that's part of why we keep coming back. You know, certainly we have periods of meditation where we're not holding those concepts so lightly, where we're kind of bothered by those concepts that keep visiting us while we sit here. And but with enough frequency, we are able to relax into this posture and into this mind and feel the enjoyment of that relaxed hold on our thoughts. And have this feeling that this is our life, as much as driving to work is our life, as much as maintaining our relationship with family and friends is our life, as much as swimming in the ocean on a warm day as our life. This peaceful abiding as a manifestation of the empty interdependent universe is our life. That's why Rujing in his poem says we're piling these bones on the flat earth in this empty cave in the middle of emptiness. At the same time, we're also washing our bodies, we're eating our meals, we're stretching our legs. And during these 8 weeks, we're trying to do all of these activities wholeheartedly, caring, embracing, merging, intimate with just this. I think it's especially hard in our relationships and with the people that we have in our lives to drop the conceptions that we've developed over the years about what time they get up, what kind of food they like, what jokes of mine they like, what jokes of mine they wish I wouldn't tell again. It's hard to give up those conceptions of people. One practice that I read of was, can you look at your mother and imagine her as a teenager before you were even born, before you had any kind of relationship, before she ever looked at you with perhaps those caring eyes that she looked at you as. Can you have that? Can you meet her without those years and years of conceptions that were reinforced over and over again? What a great practice. I think it's hard to do, but you might learn a little something about that other person without all those fixed ideas that kind of flood your mind just at the thought of your mother, much less greeting her in person. Catherine was once asked what she imparts on a student during practice discussion, or when a student asks to talk about practice. And Catherine said that she tried to create a field wherein the student wouldn't have to run up against Catherine's preconceived ideas about that student. So Catherine was saying she tried in her teaching and her working with students to drop the conceptions that she had formed with them over the years. She said that when the student isn't bumping up against my conceptions all the time, it's a much more open-hearted, engaging, intimate conversation. So what a practice. What a practice to try. I mean, you don't even have to be in practice period. What a practice to take on. Maybe first with somebody at work, that you can experiment on. How easy is this going to be? I don't have a great relationship with this person, but it's friendly enough. Can I try to meet this person totally brand new? And see how that goes, and then you can, if that's an opening practice for you, you can kind of work up the chain of intimacy that you have with other people, and see how that goes. Maybe end with your mother. That might be the most complicated, if not most intimate, relationships that we all have. I'm aware of how quickly my mind tries to make up stories about people in my life. The house next door to me has at any time 4 to 8 students living in it. And we're always, for these last 20-some years, been in this intimate relationship with each other because our houses are so close to each other. There's a new group of students that moved in for winter semester at the beginning of January, and I haven't met them yet. I haven't even seen them yet. I've heard their voices, and I'm aware that I'm making up stories about them already, even though I just hear their voices. They had one party, and it wasn't too bad. They seem to keep it all in the house rather than in the patio right outside my bedroom. So far I'm feeling good about it, but I actually don't even know how many people there are. You know, I'm just trying to count different voices, but I'm making up stories with very little information. One bit of information is that in that first week they plunked a Bernie sign out in front of their house, and so I have to make up a story. I mean, should I make up a story that they, along with Bernie, want to reduce the barriers to economic equality for all people in the United States? Should I cling to that story, or should I call them rich white kids who probably won't even vote if Bernie doesn't get the Democratic nomination? You know, so with just this little bit of information, I'm trying to make up this story about them. And, I've got 8 weeks to carve out some emptiness. I'll sign that on my practice period schedule. But we are conceptualizing beings. And I think just being aware, when we can catch ourselves in the same story, repeating the same lines to ourselves, can we just mindfully say, hold on, that's not the whole story. Can I loosen up my grip on that story? Can I let this one go a little bit? Can I engage with my life with a little more caring and wholeheartedness? Just putting away the dishes with both hands connects me with my life a little bit more intimately. Just getting in my car with the attention that I want to drive home harmoniously. I want to have the confidence that everybody is driving with the intention of being harmonious. And can I not make up another story about a person that I might not even see, that might have a different idea about driving than me? Can I keep this wholehearted engagement with the activities in my life because I've developed the confidence that this is another name for the Buddhas and ancestors. So over the last couple of weeks, about a dozen of us have agreed to take on this practice period in a formal way, looking at our practice in the Zendo, our sitting, taking on practices at home, such as doing the meal chant. Many of us are signing up for the retreat that starts tomorrow for the 5 days. So, you know, about a dozen of us will be doing this in a formal way. But, you know, this is a Sangha-wide event. Anyone can wholeheartedly look at their activities throughout the day. Maybe picking a few, you know, like, you know, how will I handle the dishes, or how will I sit down to a meal, or maybe I'll come an extra evening to the Zendo and take part in the chanting. So all of us can take on this manifesting Buddhas and ancestors for these 8 weeks. Everyone is invited to participate in the sesshins and the day sits, whether they're in practice period or not. And if you've not signed up yet, you might look at the schedule outside and come join us for a few periods, like, you know, 7:30 at night, come sit a couple of periods at the end of the day, or come extra early at 5 in the morning if you're a morning person, do an extra period there, or come at 8:30 and sit a period or two, and then we'll have a discussion, a little a lecture on practicing. So a person could come from 8:30 to noon, for instance, and take part in the practice period. Michael, our head student, our Shuso, will be offering a discussion on practice and devotion on Sunday nights at 5:30, kind of during our usual sitting. But if you'd like to discuss, you know, how practice lives and breathes in your life throughout the day, whether you're in practice period or not, you can go to that gathering at 5:30 on Sunday evenings. There's classes throughout the practice period, throughout these 8 weeks that you can attend. So whether or not you're doing it formally, you can still wholeheartedly look at your practice, as well as how you engage with the world throughout the day. Maybe I'll end here. If you've got any questions about practice period, it's a long tradition here at Santa Cruz Zen Center. It's we've done it twice a year for as long as I've been coming here, and there was lots of evidence that it happened even before then, even before I came here. And it certainly goes back to Buddha's day, and I think before that, I think it was always a traditional gathering of the monks, even before Buddhism, and in whatever spiritual tradition there were monks. Any questions or thoughts or ideas about practice period or this splashing about in the black bucket? Shuso.
Patrick, I find making up stories. people attach emotions to that story. Do you address that also? It gives you a reason to be angry with somebody or happy with somebody, but there seems to be emotions attached to the stories I make up about people that I might not know a lot about.
Yeah. So this practice isn't meant to be kind of a buzzkill for your life and make everything flat. And I think we, you know, with this practice, it might end up giving us this luminous clarity, this joyful presence in our activity right here and now, when we say that's not the whole story, and if you've made up a story and you're feeling pretty good about it, you can still say that's not the whole thing, and still get and still feel good about it. I mean, still have a good feeling, but just sort of know that, you know, you just made that up, and it's like liking your own jokes. And you can also say to your, if the emotions that come up with the story is not such a pleasant emotion, you can say, you know, it's not the whole story, and I'm not going to hold on to that one so tightly either. So it's not to flatten your life. It's really to kind of tell yourself, in addition to this story that I've made up, there's a whole lot more, and I want to be open. I want to make sure that this story doesn't close me off, even in a good way, even if it's a pretty good story. I don't want to be closed off from anything that is the ultimate truth. Thank you. Richard.
Quickly, the black water, that's a wonderful image to me, in black water, not dirty water, black water. But for me, it's basically what you're saying in terms of doing something fully open up, hearted. That's not the way we probably, but without any story. So the black water is not knowing, but fully, what am I trying to say, full-hearted?
Wholehearted engagement.
Wholeheartedly going ahead, into this, but with no story. And that no story that you're talking about, meeting someone without any conception, to me is can't be how miraculous that is. I don't think I've ever done it in my life, but I have had people do that to me. And the amazing thing about when, in the rare occasion when you meet someone who's meeting you that way, what I felt is all in their presence, all my questions and hatreds and judgments about myself go away, and I start to feel completely elevated into some, like, it's the highest being I could be. And I feel them giving that to me just because I know I can just feel that's what they're seeing. They're not seeing any of my story or my, nonsense or anything. And it's I always am so touched when I think about that way. If only I could do that, that gave to someone,
Yeah.
But it's certainly, I've certainly received it with great appreciation.
Yeah. Yeah. What would that practice look like? I mean, I guess for me, you know, maybe I'd start off, you know, maybe once or twice during an engagement with a casual coworker. You know, if a thought came up, like even a memory of work that we've done before, I would say, I'm going to let that one go for now, and just see if that doesn't start me off on that path to holding, you know, this idea about a person a little less tightly, and maybe over time I can build up to that, you know, kind of full non-grasping. But I think it's a good practice. I turn that merit over to Catherine Thanis herself, who I think on occasion, you know, I did feel that practice of hers of just acceptance without preconceived ideas. Thank you, Kathy.
Actually, that was Catherine's definition of saving all beings, was allowing people to, you know, not judging and not creating objects and giving people the gift of not being an object for your imputation.
Mm-hmm.
When I asked her what does saving all beings mean, she says it means not making others into objects.
Yeah. No, that's a great
practice. It's a lifelong practice.
Yeah.
Obviously,
yeah.
We're all reactivated all the time.
Yeah.
That's actually liberates beings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Including us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No. I think she felt very much a part of that field that she was creating, or that she was manifesting as well. That was as much for her benefit in engaging as for the benefit of the student.
Oh, yeah.
And that intimacy, you know, when there isn't, when the person you're with isn't the object, it's the one bright pearl. It's unity. It's equal. Thank you. Eno.
In the practice of becoming aware of my stories and wanting to work skillfully with them, I found that it's really helpful to ask a question rather than make a declaration. So if I see something coming up, just ask myself, oh, is that a story? Rather than, oh, that's such a story. Because it really takes away all the judgment. We have stories. We're not going to have a life without stories.
Mm-hmm.
So how can we be kind to ourselves while we're working with our stories and not just add more suffering to the suffering that the stories already create?
Mm-hmm.
So asking the question rather than making the declarative statement,
mm-hmm.
I find to be helpful.
Very, very nice. Very nice. Thank you. Thank you. Nick?
So frequently I find myself slipping into moments of kind of rashness or getting frustrated, especially, you know, it might have been a while since I ate, or maybe I didn't get good sleep the night before. I've tried a couple different techniques for coming back to a place of stillness and recentering myself, but it seemed to always fall short. What are some practices that are a good way to recenter yourself when you know I notice that happen?
What have you tried a few things?
I try to count my breath, or just even recognize that when I sit zazen, I don't have these emotions and stuff come up. So if I'm really trying to bring that into the rest of my life, I shouldn't be experiencing it now, and I shouldn't let these external realities affect me this way. And that helps, but at the same time, I spent 2 hours yesterday going through this enrollment process for a bank, and it was very, very frustrating, and I lost my temper. And no matter how much I tried to remind myself, it seemed to not matter. So I was just kind of wondering if there was maybe some other stuff that I haven't tried that would make that easier.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think you probably have a pretty good toolbox already, and like Lori said, be sure that you're not being too hard on yourself. And sometimes we just get caught. Sometimes, you know, that special button is pulled or pushed, and we're just off in a dream, in a nightmare. And those you just have to learn how to be a good apologizer for, and you start with the smaller irritations, and you use that mindfulness of your body to really identify, you know, what are the early signs of this irritation in my body? Is it my shoulders? Is it something in my stomach? Is it something in my breath? And with the easy ones, you can just say, I need to bring out some of the toolbox and center myself again. And when you develop that skill, the hope is that those big buttons don't get triggered so much, or you see them early enough. So it's the toolbox is very much our practice. And then the intention to say, you know, this is something I really want to look at in my life, and really to take on that practice, either for a practice period or for a weekend, or for just for a day, is I'm really going to look at the rising and passing of irritation and see if I can't learn a little something about my particular brand of it. So keep that going. We dedicate the merit of our contemplation of the Buddhas and ancestors and the wholehearted experience of our life to the well-being of all beings. Beings are numberless. I vow to save them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to end them. Dharma gates are boundless. I vow to enter them. Buddha.